The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A little later on in the show, Sid Lowe and Don Hutchinson will be here to discuss the possibility of Sergio Ramos moving to Manchester City. We start, though, with the US men who are in action today in Austria, taking on Panama, and after that goalless draw against Wales, fans were crying out for goals. Well, I tell you what, they got six of them. Giochini with a brace, Soto with two as well. Gio Reyna getting his first goal for the US. Sebastian Lletchet joining the club as well. Casey Keller and Shaka Hislop with us to reflect on this game. Lots to talk about. Overall, Casey, of course, this is what you want, isn't it? As a fan, despite the opposition, goals.
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you can't win a match if you don't score any goals. And obviously the U.S. scored plenty today, but it has to be taken into perspective a little bit. When you look at the opposition against Wales and what a good defensive side the Welsh are, you then come into a Panamanian team that just gifted the U.S. opportunities. A slow start for the U.S. team, going a goal down. And then, okay, they got their three goals in 8 minutes. But if you really were to fast forward into the second half, when Panama scored their second, if you had switched the goalkeepers for the two national teams, the U.S. would have been 2-0 down in this game. So, yes, they were gifted some goals. They got them, fair enough. But it really, for me, it wasn't as convincing as the scoreline showed.
Oh, Casey, you and your anti-USA ways.
Yes, that's me, anti-USA all the way. I got 102 caps because I really dislike my country and playing for it. But you have to look at the perspective in it, Dan. I mean, that's simple enough. I mean, it just was not as convincing away from the fact that they did score the goals, but they were gifted a lot of those goals. And it was, yes, you take what you're given, of course. But still, I don't think you can really judge too much of this match based on the gifts they were given.
But Shaq, you were saying beforehand on this sort of performance, they're going to win the World Cup in 2022.
Let me just tell you something. But for Casey's 102 caps, and maybe if he had a Panamanian grandfather, right now, Casey Keller would have been an upgrade on Mosquera in between his sticks for Panama. Listen, the issue for the U.S. is they, especially what we saw in 2018, they can't or shouldn't take CONCACAF opposition for granted. Panama 77th in the world, but eighth in CONCACAF. So you have to take this for what it is. And they did exactly what was asked of them. Added to that, six goals, remember, they also had a penalty save, so it could have been so much worse. But then in qualifying, I think the U.S. ultimately will be judged on how they perform at World Cups against opposition like we saw against Wales. So there's this dual battle in terms of what the U.S. and Berhalter has to do in preparing his squads and going forward. They did everything that could be asked of them against CONCACAF opposition. Still a work in progress as far as European opposition and what they may face at the World Cup. And as disappointing as the Wales performance, if not result, was, you take what you got today against Panama. A young squad had to come from a goal behind, had to play at times where they didn't have the ball but kept themselves in the game, and you did it. You take it for what it is.
I am concerned now as we're going to look at Casey's marks out of 10 for the players and given his grumpy pants ways, take a look at who got what. Gio Reyna, the only 8 for you, Casey.
Well, and I think what I would love to be able to preference was is if you take the first 10 minutes out of the match And then you go up into halftime, there would have been probably a score higher on a lot of those numbers. It was just they came out the second half and they just didn't perform the way they finished the first half. They allowed Panama to get back into the game to make it 3-2. Okay, the response after that was great, and the subs came on and did their job. But it just wasn't consistent enough for 90 minutes and against not a very good opposition. And so, yes, there's so many positives to take out of the match. It's just that if they want to qualify, and then, as Shaka said, be judged against better opposition in a World Cup, you can't afford to have those kind of lapses. We saw what happened in qualifying the last time. You'd have a home game, you'd win comfortably 4-5-0, and you'd go on the road and have a lackluster performance and lose a match that you shouldn't have lost, and eventually you end up not qualifying for a World Cup. So there has to be a way that Greg Berhalter gets some better consistency out of the team. Defensively, fantastic against Wales the other day. Today, you concede two goals against a far inferior opponent. It's that kind of consistency that has to come around.
Shaka, who caught your eye today for the U.S.? Don't talk about the Panamanian goalkeeper. Who, for the U.S., who was good?
Listen, it's got to be through the middle. And Casey mentioned Reina, who again continues to be outstanding. I'd like to see a bit more from Weston McKennie in midfield and controlling the pace of the game a little bit more. My only criticism around the US is the pace of the game today wasn't really reflective of what you expect at the highest levels of international football. At times, you have to just slow the game right down, and maybe that's what the game was, or the US side of the game was calling out for when Panama controlled so much of the possession early on in the second half. And that's where I am a big Weston McKennie fan, and I know he's finding opportunities fairly limited at Juventus, but I feel he's got the talent, he's got the personality to better stamp his authority right in the middle of the park in controlling the tempo of the game when it's getting away from you a little bit more. So I'd like to see a little bit more from him. But given the tempo of the game and how fast-paced it was perfectly in keeping with what you'd expect from Gio Reyna, what he's used to, and he excelled more than anybody else.
We know the US fans desperate for a number nine. Where does Joe Keeney stand after that performance today, Casey?
Well, I think he keeps himself in the conversation. Obviously, Soto coming in and getting a couple goals as well. There's some good size there. Joe Keeney, I mean, he's playing in the second division in France. He's scored a few goals this season already. He's still young. I mean, he's worth obviously having a look. But I think as the opposition gets stronger, and let's take a look at the two goals that he scored. And obviously, you know, the penalty he missed. I mean, big deal, that happens. But it wasn't as if he was really terrorizing Panama. He just put himself in the right spot, which, of course, is extremely important for any goal scorer. So I give him a lot of credit for doing that. I didn't see a lot of work in the build-up play. But again, he's a goal scorer. He's the number nine. He's in the center of the park. He scores two goals. Had the chance for the hat trick. So a lot of credit. And then I think there is some young players. Obviously, we wanted to see Josh Sargent. He wasn't able to come. And then we're all still waiting to see, is Jozy Altidore still factoring into this national team? So Greg Berhalter has some options, and it's a question of some players stepping up and making that decision for him. And Joe Keeney didn't do himself any disservice today. I thought he really helped his cause.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, the U.S. did win the game 6-2. The MLS playoffs are almost upon us. Nashville taking on Inter Miami is our feature game on Friday night. You can catch it on ESPN2 at 8:30 Eastern.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
A number of big games across the Nations League on Tuesday and Wednesday. Let's focus, shall we, on the match between Spain and Germany. A winner-takes-all tie. Spain need to win it, though, if they're going to qualify for these semi-finals. Let's welcome in, shall we, Don Hutchinson and Sid Lowe. Sid, overall, how importantly or how seriously has Spain taken this tie?
Well, look, I think they're taking it seriously in the sense that it's seen as a big game because it's Germany, because of the significance of getting through to that final four in the Nations League, and because that does matter. That said, the majority of the focus of this whole competition and all of these games is really about what does this mean in terms of where we'll be for the European Championships next summer. So the Nations League, it's kind of a secondary. It's of secondary importance. It's not the biggest priority, but I mean it's important enough that Spain will play their strongest possible team tomorrow, that they will care if they win or not, that they will be excited about the possibility of getting to the final four. But as I say, fundamentally this is being interpreted through that idea of what it means in terms of the European Championships.
So it's quite something when you take a look at the possible Spain starting 11, and it's impossible not to compare it to a team 10 years ago that had all that success. The standard is so much lower than it was then. So does that give them a pass almost, or is there expectation that they need to improve?
Well, it's curious, you know, because this kind of keeps coming up. And the reason I say it's curious is because it's quite a long way ago now.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago that Spain won three tournaments in a row. You know, the last one was the European Championships in 2012. And it's not just that, but look at what they did since then. World Cup 2014, didn't even get out the group. European Championships 2016, get knocked out in the first knockout game against Italy. World Cup in 2018, get beaten by Russia, of all teams, in Moscow. And so you've got three tournaments in a row in which it's not just that Spain haven't won anything again, it's they haven't got through a single knockout round. And yet we still seem to be going kind of beyond that to what happened before. And that's part of the discussion in Spain all the time. And in terms of whether that means that the demands are there for that, yes, they are. But it is also true, the other part of the equation that you offered up there, it is also true that there's always this kind of proviso put on it and saying, look, let's not ask them to be what they once were. Let's accept that we're not that team anymore. That the only people left, I believe, in the current squad are Sergio Ramos and Sergio Busquets. The only people left from the World Cup winning team. Those players are not there anymore. And I think what it does do is it does set the bar a little bit high. But at the same time, it kind of says, yeah, but if you can't reach it, that's to be expected. I think what there is a bit of a sense that there's some exciting players coming through. There's a bit of a sense that Spain should be better than they are, but no demands for them to be the absolute best.
Meanwhile, Don, it wasn't that long ago, we were talking about the future of Jurgen Love and how it was very much being questioned by the German fans. They'd had enough of his negative football and poor results, yet they have turned it around to such an extent, obviously, that they can top this group.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously what's happened with Germany, they had to go through that rebuild, which has been there once or twice before, and they've had a squad, in terms of their A squad, where it's been so good and so impeccable over the years, then, you know, a disastrous couple of campaigns where you looked at where the depth was. And Germany's under 21s, 23s are so, so good. They had to go for that period of time where the first team didn't sort of cut it anymore. There was a lot of old faces in there, a lot of tired legs that have played loads of tournament football. And you look at where they're going to go in the future, and it looks really, really bright. You know, when you look at the Bundesliga at the moment and you look at the young talent coming through in Germany, it's outstanding. You know, it's can they take that transition quickly into the Euros, and it'll be a fantastic test for them.
Sid, if there's a penalty tomorrow, who takes it?
Sergio Ramos does. Luis Enrique even said this the other day after he'd missed the second. Post-game, Luis Enrique said, yeah, he missed the second. He'd missed the first as well. If there would have been a third, he would have taken it. And if there'd been a fourth, he would have taken it as well. There's no doubt about it. I think it's worth putting this into context, by the way. Yes, Sergio Ramos missed two penalties in a game, but before that, he'd scored 25 in a row. So he's not bad at these things.
No, but the second one was really rubbish, Sid. It clearly was in his head.
To be honest with you, the second one, given that, you know, the sort of the headline is Sergio Ramos misses a Panenka, it could have been more embarrassing. You know, you imagine the goalie just standing there and watching the ball float up. It's like, oh, thanks very much, and just grabbing it. But it was bad, yeah. Although that said, you know, there's a lot of accusations at Ramos. You know, the way that he takes the penalties is just indulgent. It's just him showing off. Well, actually, that 25 goal scoring run of penalties, when probably around about a third of them have been Panenkas, tells you that what he does works normally. It didn't last time.
Let's talk about his future, Sid, which has made the headlines over the last 24 hours. Talk of him going to Manchester City or PSG.
Yeah, and this has been risen by one very simple fact. It is, what are we, at the start of November, at the start of January, Sergio Ramos will be within the final 6 months of the contract. He will be legally allowed to talk to any club that he wants, although admittedly, of course, he's absolutely going to be talking to clubs now already if he wants to. Negotiations with Real Madrid have begun but haven't been concluded. There is a certain degree of needing to put pressure on Real Madrid, of needing to remind them of the potential consequences of not renewing his contract and where he could go and how that could, what kind of position that could lead them in. From Real Madrid's point of view, of course, they need to force Sergio Ramos down in terms of the salary. This is a very, very difficult situation for them economically because of the pandemic. They've lost a huge amount of money. And so the negotiations are difficult. That said, I think it is in everyone's interest and everyone knows it's in everyone's interest for him to re-sign. And I must admit, and this may be over-cynical of me, I suspect that talk of other clubs is a way of trying to leverage pressure on Real Madrid and say, look, don't run the risk here.
Imagine if he went to Liverpool. Imagine if he went to Liverpool. Stevie would be able to cope with it.
Sergio Ramos has been playing this card, feels like, for a decade. Was it his mum or his sister that was saying, oh, he's going to go to England, this is his time? Bang, new four-year deal at Real Madrid. He plays the card better than anyone.
He walks into any team, though, doesn't he, Don?
I think he does, you know, even at his age. I think when you are picking a team and you're picking a team of men and leaders and guys that have done it and who are winners, he's definitely in that bracket. You know, when he does leave us and he does retire from the game, which will be a fair few years down the line, I think he'll be remembered as a real galactic on one of Real Madrid and Spain's best ever.
Sid, what about this possibility that we could see him at Manchester City and Lionel Messi at Manchester City as well?
Well, it'd be quite exciting for Manchester City fans. I'm not sure whether it's a long-term project from their point of view to do that. I must admit, it is very early and who knows how things will develop. And we've talked about before the difficult relationship that exists between Ramos and Florentino Pérez, even though I think, as I say, there's a lovely Spanish phrase, which is that they're condemned to understand each other. And I feel like that's where we're at now. These two are condemned to understand each other. But before they reach that point, there's quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing to be done. I don't see it happening at City. But it'd be very interesting to watch him in the English League. And one thing's for sure, Ramos believes that if he played in the English League all of his career, he wouldn't have the, how many is it, 17, 18 red cards that he's had?
Right.
He would have got away with only 4 or 5.
He does know that we have VAR. VAR doesn't work very well, but we do have it, Sid. And kicking people off the ball is normally a red card no matter which league you're in.
But bear in mind that the immense majority of Ramos's career has been played without VAR.
Yes.
So in those years, things would have been slightly better.
Yeah, imagine how many more he'd have had. Thank you very much, boys. That Spain against Germany game, of course, not the only big one on Tuesday. Croatia taking Portugal. It's also France against Sweden. And then on Wednesday, Poland against Netherlands. England against Iceland. It's decider between Belgium and Denmark. And Bosnia-Herzegovina, who take on Italy.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
In case you missed it, quite the explosive interview with former Barcelona director Javier Bordas in Mundo Deportivo at the weekend, saying we had the option of buying Kylian Mbappe for 100 million when we were pursuing Ousmane Dembele. but the technical secretary preferred Dembele. The explanation at the time was that Mbappe played for himself and Dembele plays for the team. Haaland didn't join Barcelona because the technical staff told me that he wasn't a Barca type of striker, that he was not a player with Barca DNA. The truth is that players come and you don't know how they will perform. Sid Lowe is still with us. Sid, how has this been received by Barcelona fans?
Well, I mean, that particular part of it, I think most people are kind of have got their heads in their hands a little bit. There is a little bit of a doubt about how much of this is real, how much of this is a kind of a sense of fantasy from Bordas, whose whole interview is really quite bizarre, actually. All the way through the interview, there are elements of it that don't quite fit right. There's a sense, clearly, of course, of him talking himself up, of him trying to make himself sound important, but at the same time trying to make himself sound like someone who should have been listened to more and wasn't listened to enough. But if this particular part of it is true, and of course most people are making the assumption that at least in basic terms it's true, I mean, it's just mind-blowing, isn't it? And it's not just mind-blowing now, with hindsight, having seen how these two players have played out. It really isn't, because even then, I think everybody already had Kylian Mbappe penciled in as the next best player in the world, you know, the guy that was going to lead the next generation of great players, post-Messi, post-Ronaldo. It was going to be Mbappe, and it wasn't going to be Ousmane Dembélé at that point. It's not like this is because things have gone badly since. If this really is true, it just beggars belief, to be honest.
Sticking with Barcelona, Sid, it's the first time I've had the opportunity to talk to you about those quotes from Antoine Griezmann's former agent, talking about Lionel Messi's regime of terror, talking about the fact that he's as good on the pitch as he is bad off it. What's been your reaction to that, and has there been any sort of semblance of truth to it?
Well, it's curious, actually, because my feeling is that given the strength of these remarks, given the significance of them, that there's actually been relatively little reaction. Now, I think there's a number of reasons for that. One is that actually this is something that I think a lot of Barcelona fans don't want to hear. I think it's something that a lot of Barcelona fans, and indeed even in the media, don't entirely buy, even if they buy bits of it, even if they'll accept part of it, don't entirely buy it. I think there's also the fact that, and you said it, this is the former, agent of Antoine Griezmann. And there are question marks, I think, asked there about, well, what's the reason for saying this? What's the motivation behind this? Is there something going on? Not least, of course, because if you're looking out for for Griezmann himself, if you're trying to do things the best you possibly can by him, this doesn't help. You know, even if it was true, it certainly doesn't help to say it publicly. Griezmann himself, of course, has made a point of not actually denying it, not actually giving it the credence to deny it. But you know, there was that photo he put on social media of him and Messi embracing. There was the fact that Messi gave him that assist in the last game. And I think there is this kind of concerted attempt to present a different portrait. Now, that said, of course, this comes in the context of that interview we saw with Quique Setién and Vicente del Bosque, where at the very least, for the first time, I think there is a discussion about, if you like, some of the consequences of the way that Messi is so important for the club, the way in which that changes perhaps the context and the culture around the club, and whether at times that's problematic. But I think while most people are prepared to accept that there are certain things that go with having a player like Messi, I don't think too many people are prepared to accept it in quite these terms. Now, had Eric Olas come out and said, look, at times it can be difficult, at times things have to be done for Messi, at times Messi conditions the way the team play too much, I think most people have accepted and actually said, well, this is a fair enough price to pay for having a player like Messi who's been the best in the world for whatever it is, 15 years. But it's the use of phrases like reign of terror that I think make most people kind of take a step back and just think, yeah, this is probably not something to engage with quite as much as we might otherwise have done.
Meanwhile, Sid, really disappointing news coming out of the Uruguay camp. Luis Suarez testing positive for the coronavirus. Of course, why this is so disappointing is that this weekend, it's Luis Suarez's Atletico Madrid up against his old side, Barcelona.
Yeah, it really is a pity. I mean, I know obviously some Barcelona fans will be thinking, well, we're really pleased that this hasn't been the case, but it really is a pity. And look, I say this as a journalist, and people always think we're biased. We are biased. We like good stories. We like things to happen that are interesting. And Suarez playing against Barcelona, and not just, by the way, playing against Barcelona, but Suarez playing against Barcelona with Atletico in a position where they could go top of the table, with Atletico looking very much like a genuine candidate for the league title this year, and with Luis Suarez playing such a key role in that, it feels like something's been taken away from us, and away from the league, by the way, not just away from people who aren't Barcelona fans, not just away from Atletico Madrid fans, but not just away from journalists either, by the way, and we're certainly not the most important people out there, but just a sense that it's such a pity, because this was part of that belief we all had that this year's title race was going to be really exciting, that this year's title race was definitely going to have at least a third candidate, maybe even a fourth, because let's see what happens with Real Sociedad. And it just feels like another part of, you know, the impact that the coronavirus is having on the purely sporting side of things. Now, of course, in health terms, it's far more serious. And yeah, it's a very big pity.
Can Atleti still do it, Sid, without Suarez?
Well, they've actually played quite well a couple of times without him as well. I personally think he's very important to the way that they're shifting in terms of their identity. Diego Simeone himself said it. There was a very interesting remark he made. I think it was before the last Champions League game when he was asked about the shift in style, the fact that Atletico had the ball more, the fact that they were taking more shots, that territorially they were playing further up the pitch. And he said, look, the whole thing starts with Suarez. It starts with the fact that Suarez has different needs and different qualities to the kind of strikers we've had before. So everything has to evolve and shift because of him. But obviously that's been good for some other players. I think it's been good for Koke. I think it's been very good for João Félix, who's been really important. But that said, and you know, to go directly to your question, possibly their best performance was away in Pamplona against Osasuna when Suarez actually didn't play. And the combination that worked so well up front was Ángel Correa with João Félix. So yeah, it's not implausible at all that they play and they still will beat Barcelona, because so far this season, even if we take Suarez out of the equation, the truth is Atletico Madrid have impressed more than Barcelona have.
It's a lot of Sid Lowe today, and if you want more of him for some reason, you can check out Extra Time, which is available over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I tell you what, the Premier League is back with a bang this weekend. Some cracking matches. We'll focus on first versus third at Anfield. Liverpool taking on Leicester City. Don's still with us. Don, the big talking point going into this is how many players Jurgen Klopp will not have at his disposal. Salah, of course, testing positive for COVID. And we saw Jordan Henderson come off in that defeat against Belgium.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he's just going to pick 11 James Milners. He's the only one that's sort of reliable. It's incredible. I mean, Leicester have got a big injury list as well, so we mustn't feel too sorry for Liverpool. But when you do look at the players and the areas that they're and Jurgen Klopp's missing, it's all across his back four. And there's players at the top end of the pitch when Salah's missing because of COVID, like Jota can come in, and Mane, Firmino, they've got Origi, they've got Minamino. So there's enough talent at the top end of the pitch. It's just a question, what does Jurgen Klopp do now when he tries to pick a side defensively, when they're playing Leicester, who are banging form and score goals against anyone, and the quickest striker in the league, Jamie Vardy, is going to be playing? So does he play Jordan Henderson If he's fit because of his experience and play him at centre half and James Milner at right back, does he go with
what would you do, Don?
Reece Williams or Nat Phillips? There's loads of questions to be asked.
What would you do, Don?
I would go Jordan Henderson just
really?
Because I would, because I've played central midfield all my life, Dan, and I've also played centre half, and it's easier when you play central midfield to go back one, and you can play as a centre half, and you can see the whole picture in front of you. You know, whether you talk Mascherano or Javi Martinez or Fernandinho, there's been loads of players that have played central midfield and played centre half, and it's a lot easier. But you very rarely see centre halves who then step into midfield because it's so hard. So I would go with, if everyone's fit in terms of what we think, who's going to be fit, I'd go with James Milner at right back because he's adaptable. He can play anywhere across the back four. Inside one, I'd go Jordan Henderson because of their relationship and their communication between one another. And then Matip and Andy Robertson, if those two are fit as well, that would be the likely of the back four. I mean, he might go Reece Williams, who hasn't played a Premier League game, but he's got a turn of pace. He played well against Atalanta. Or you can go Nat Phillips, who's very, very good in the air, but not necessarily quick. So I think if it was me picking an 11, I think Jordan Henderson would be in that centre-half position.
What a statement it would be from Leicester if they get the win, Don.
It would be, and it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't shock me if they got a win. I mean, I know, you know, the stats and everything goes against them, where Liverpool haven't lost a game in like three and a half years at Anfield. So that would seem like a shock. But when you take everything into consideration and how many players Liverpool are missing in their back four, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Leicester beat Man City 5-2, so it shows they've got goals in their locker and they can beat anyone. They can also lose against anyone as well. But they seem a team that's really, you know, in good form and in a good period, and they've got momentum as well. So this is a real tricky one. I wouldn't have thought, if you asked Jurgen Klopp, would he take a point before the game? But it feels like if you offered Liverpool fans a 1-1 draw and get out of there and then move on to the next week where they've got Fabinho and Thiago back, they might just take that.
Completely different subject now, Don. It's a story that has attracted attention from all around the world. Movie star Ryan Reynolds has bought Wrexham Football Club. I doubt a lot of people know much about Wrexham, Don. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small-time club trying to battle its way back into the divisions, and I was lucky enough to make my debut for Scotland B there. Andy Roxburgh picked me in a game, Wales v Scotland, and it was at Wrexham. Old-fashioned ground, really tight, really small. Great fans. I mean, you know, I played at Hartlepool, which is a similar sort of standard to Wrexham, and they really get behind their team, and they're a fantastic club, but a very, very small club. So it seems really bizarre. It seems an unlikely fit, an unlikely marriage, but listen, while it gives Wrexham fans a little bit of hope at getting back into the Football League, it can only be good, and it seems really positive.
Don, thank you very much. For more on this extraordinary story, you can check out the article over on the website. Domestic football, of course, returns this weekend all across Europe. Serie A schedule, full slate for you. 3 games on Saturday. And then what about Sunday? It's all about Napoli against AC Milan. What a match that should be, live on ESPN at 2:45 Eastern. Bundesliga, of course, back as well. A number of games for you on Saturday, including Bayern Munich against Werder Bremen. Hertha Berlin against Borussia Dortmund is the late game. And then on Sunday, Freiburg against Mainz, and it's Köln against Union Berlin. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you for everyone who has been on. We'll be back tomorrow for more, but be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next with Sid Lowe and Don Hutchinson answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Don Hutchinson is here, as is Sid Lowe. Sid, do you mind if I ask you a personal question? Did you pay for that T-shirt?
Yes, I did. Is that a bad thing?
No. The reason I ask it, because our other guest today doesn't really pay for anything. If you follow him on Instagram, it's just product placement everywhere. Thanks for this free coat. Thanks for this.
Right.
Thanks for this car. Thanks for everything.
I tell you what,
it's nice to be loved and liked. I'm not sure you get any free clobber these days.
Why did your free coat come with a compass, Don?
It's just the design of the jacket. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well, of course,
wouldn't you say
that's a freebie.
On your jacket?
Have you been orienteering? Do you know how to use a compass?
No, but just in case, you never know. You never know. When you need a compass, you never know.
Oh, it's done.
I'd like to take advantage I really would like to take advantage of this situation just to say if there are any companies out there
right.
that would like to send me some free stuff.
If you follow me on Insta, I'm
more than happy to receive it.
Get some free coats.
I'll hook you up on Insta.
There you go. For Sid.
If I could have a compass, that would be great.
For Sid, what has a higher chance of happening? Sergio Ramos leaving Madrid or Messi leaving Barcelona?
Messi leaving Barcelona.
Is it still going to happen next summer?
I don't know. I honestly don't think that Messi knows.
Right. Yeah,
that Messi is completely clear on this. Because last year there were reasons for going. Some of those reasons remain. A lot of them do, but some of them don't. And I also think that while we haven't really talked about it, I think the fact that he's 1 year further on makes it a different mental process, makes it a different kind of decision. So I honestly don't know what's going to happen there, but I think of the two scenarios, I think Messi leaving is more likely than Sergio Ramos leaving.
Don, is there any chance that Grealish is still at Villa by the start of next season, even if Villa finish in a European place?
Great question. I think all the big boys now, and I mean the very biggest of boys, like Real Madrid and Barcelona, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, they're all looking at Jack Grealish now, and the game, you know, that he played last night for England. You know, I've heard loads of comparisons with Jack Grealish, and I get them. And I said one today, and I don't mean he's going to end up like this player, but I see loads of Paul Gascoigne in him. The way he takes people on, the way he's got ball at his feet, the way he's changed of direction. He's arrogant when he's got the ball. He's got that bit of cockiness about him. He loves the big stage. So the way he's going at the moment, and he's going to go right to the very top. He's an exceptional player.
Sid, have Real Madrid given up on the Galacticos model, or is this just a temporary setback because of COVID?
No, if you look at the policy over the last few years, this goes back a very long way. It's not just now. I mean, Hazard was the first Galactico they'd signed basically since James Rodriguez, and I think that's a four-year gap between Galacticos. I think if you look at the signings they made, in particular when you look at Rodrigo and Vinicius, I think this was very clearly an economic imperative. It was very clearly about saying, OK, we probably can't compete with Paris Saint-Germain and with some of the Premier League clubs for the biggest names in the world, unless it really is the very, very biggest, and we're absolutely determined to do this. And so we have to turn our attention to players who perhaps will become that best player in the world. So I think there's an economic element that's there, which of course has been made more profound, more significant with the pandemic, but I don't think it's just about that. And so I think their policy has shifted. That said, of course, this is still Real Madrid. It's still Florentino Pérez, the president, who still has an eye for this idea that you have players that generate income. You have players that make you build your supporter base up amongst fans around the world, particularly young fans around the world. And of course, their midterm strategy, or their midterm target at least, is Kylian Mbappé, and it has been for a very long time. The question mark is whether or not they can get him. So I think the answer to the question is, the Galactico policy isn't really there anymore, but that's not the same as saying they wouldn't ever sign a Galactico.
Let's switch gears slightly now, shall we? What are the best Indian dishes that the FC panel guys have tried? Have you ever been to the subcontinent? Love from here. Well, we know that Don likes it because he tweets out on his Instagram.
I do.
Tagging the restaurant to try and get freebies. It's incredible, isn't it?
Just be careful, Dan, when you're just holding your little notes up there. There's a few little doodles on the back of your pink.
It's all right.
There's a few little doodles on there.
There's nothing rude. Nothing rude.
No, I mean, what is that?
What,
I can see Diego on there.
When you lot are chatting, I just doodle away just because it just makes me interesting.
Yeah, I'd love a psychologist to get
there's
all
a little
of that.
Picture of Gio Reyna there. Who else?
Yeah.
Love some stars. Right.
I'd like a psychologist too, but what worries me isn't just what is Dan doodling, but what is he doodling when? So you're talking, Don, and it's a certain picture.
Yeah.
I'm talking, it's a different picture.
Yes.
Marcotti's talking, it's a different one. Steve is talking, and it's a picture of a shepherd's pie. but what does this really mean about what Dan thinks about us?
I'll tell you what it means, Sid. He's not listening to what we're saying.
Pardon?
That's what it means.
What?
Absolutely, it means that, yeah. We know that, yeah.
Right, favourite Indian dish.
Anyway, that's the end of today's extra time. Bye-bye.
Sid, we used to go to that nice Indian in Madrid, remember, back in the day?
Ah, it was good.
What was that place called?
It was good, that one, yeah.
Anyway, what's your?
It was the one by the Cortes,
yes.
Yeah, on the little avenue, on the little alleyway down.
By Plaza Santana, nice. That's right. Right. Anyway.
That's right.
Sid, favourite dish?
Well, it's sort of a slight cop out, this, but I like the chicken tikka without the sauce, when it's done on a hot plate, and it's really, really nice. And then you sort of chuck on the sauce yourself, whether it's lime pickle. I suppose I'll go for a chicken tikka or a really good chicken tandoori, and then just load up the stuff yourself.
Don, whatever's free, I imagine.
Whatever's free, as long as it's not a korma, it's got to have millions of chilies on for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not ready for like a vindaloo.
Right.
So I'm on the chicken. I'm on the jalfrezi.
Yeah, I'm a jalfrezi.
Loads of red chilies.
Lovely.
Yeah, no rice, just on a peshwari naan.
Yeah. Julianne Laurent is a korma man.
Is it? Well, yeah. That makes sense.
No taste though,
well,
friend.
That figures.
Sid, could Barcelona sack Ronald Koeman if they keep struggling in La Liga?
Well, first of all, right now, in theory at least, no one can sack Koeman because, of course, you've got an interim board to see them through the electoral process. And in theory, that interim board doesn't take this kind of decision. Now, obviously, that only lasts until the elections, and the elections are going to be at the start of January, I think it is. I can't remember. No, I saw the date the other day. It was just before Christmas. So it would depend on the new president. I don't think it makes a lot of sense to do it until the end of the season. But it's not impossible. But I think in a way, the answer to the question is to say that it's not really about just the results. It's about what the new incoming board wants to do and how quickly they want to do it. So say, for argument's sake, that Victor Font wins the elections, who's been very, very public, very, very clear, and repeatedly so, that his manager would be Xavi Hernandez. So if he comes in ready for the second half of this season, does he decide that his manager is Xavi Hernandez and his manager is Xavi Hernandez right now? Or does he think, okay, well, look, let's let Koeman see the season out and then do it? So I actually think the decision might not be as hung on results as you would normally expect.
Sid, none of your Diego pictures are the hand of God, are they? I'm just looking.
No.
No, as an Englishman.
And I apologise to Sevilla fans because Sevilla do not appear in this T-shirt. Someone pointed this out to me the other day.
Wow, yeah. How long was he there for,
Sevilla?
Not long, though.
Hates Sevilla, doesn't he?
Not long. Yeah, well, things didn't go well in Sevilla. Mind you, in fairness, that was a point of his career in which, of course, most things weren't going particularly well.
Don, do you think Manchester United should move Wan-Bissaka to centre-back, given that he's a great defender but offers nothing going forward? Could it help Maguire?
I don't think he offers nothing going forward. I think he gets labelled as a very good defender, but defensively not as good. I think he's improved. And I think he's not the only one that needs to improve a little bit more and do more. He's the best defender. It's whether you can shift him inside one to play alongside Maguire. He would certainly help because he's quick. But I still think United need to go into the market and stop trying to sort of fudge it, if you like, and just go in, buy the best centre-halves. If you want to win the title and go close to Champions League finals, just go and buy the best centre-halves.
Final question, Sid. Based on recent form, do you think João Félix is the best player in La Liga, and do you think he's a future Ballon d'Or winner?
Future Ballon d'Or winner is a big shout and a big ask, and so I'm tempted to wriggle out of the answer to that question. Best player in La Liga so far this season for me is Mikel Oyarzabal, João Félix. Yeah, one of those two. One of those two, I think, so far this season.
Oh. Yeah. Future Ballon d'Or winner, you're not ready to commit to that, Sid?
No, but I guess if you look at the generation of young players, you would say it's possible that he's one of them.
Yeah, what have you got? Him, Mbappe, Haaland, I think you could throw in there as well.
I don't think he's playing for the right manager, though, Dan. Is he?
Well, so he's changing now, Don, isn't he? Simeone's softening up.
Nah, but when you watch João
Félix, and I suppose he's young enough that he'll play with others, won't he, as well, between now and being 26, 27, perhaps, as well.
Yeah, but when I watch him, Sid, you watch him and you go, he has got the most ridiculous ability, Neymar-style ability. But when you watch him playing under Simeone, it's almost like he's got to do so much defensive work in a system that doesn't really suit him. It's almost like you want him to go and play for a Man City or a Barca or a Real Madrid, where they can just go. I mean, I know, you know, finances dictate that, but in terms of how good he is, it doesn't feel a natural fit to me.
For what it's worth, obviously, first of all, I think there is a bit of a shift with Atletico this season. I think that's been partly conditioned by the arrival of Luis Suarez, which means you have now got forward who can go beyond the team, so you can't play on the counter-attacks. The whole team is being pushed further up the pitch, and I think he's been a very significant beneficiary of that. The other thing, I think is probably a clearer answer, is that there's a bit of me that thinks João Félix doesn't last at Atletico Madrid very long. You know, this isn't a player that's going to be there his whole career. I guess, I mean, I might be wrong, and I would love to be wrong. I'd love to think that he'll lead them for a generation. But to be honest with you, I just don't see that happening.
Oh, we still going. Sorry.
You're doodling now.
Dan was doodling. Were you doodling, Dan?
That's it.
What have you drawn this time? Is it a picture of an elephant, a giraffe? Is it a picture of your dinner?
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's
show. So predictable.
Thank you, as always, for joining us. Thanks for your tweets. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.